extremely happy to be here with you this morning. I'm about 14 hours back in the States after a logistical trip back from West Africa that rivaled the Amazing Race. So when I say that I'm happy to be here with you, I'm very, very happy to be here with you this morning. I think that this morning's session really testifies to how quickly the political and global health landscape can change. This time last year, when abstracts were due for APHA, foreign assistance reform was really probably the most anxiety-invoking policy change that the Global Health Council, that the global health community was facing. And while it's still a serious concern, there have been a lot of changes that I'll work through during my presentation. The process has actually slowed, and we'll get into that just a little bit. So this morning I'd like to share some slides that hopefully put global health in the context of U.S. government foreign policy as well as foreign assistance. And then, as Nancy mentioned, I think that the presentations will flow quite nicely from there. So a very obvious first slide in terms presented as pictures, the U.S. government has a long history of engaging in the world. And that engagement, moving from left to right, has been in the form of military forces, has been in terms of strategic investments and diplomatic partnerships, but also in terms of longer development, longer-term investments, including development like food aid, basic health services, but also in terms of emergencies, whether famine, natural disasters, or political unrest. I wanted to break the first rule of PowerPoint very early in my presentation and present a slide that has too many words on it. I felt that this quote, though, did capture the spirit of contemporary foreign assistance. This is a quote by John F. Kennedy in 1960. And what it does is it presents kind of the concept behind foreign assistance. And what you see in bold red here are the obligations, and note the word obligations, that the U.S. has in terms of investing around the world in terms of democracy or development as well. There are moral obligations, economic and political obligations. I would just also say before I go on to the next slide that this quote was 1960. In 1961, the Foreign Assistance Act was passed by Congress. And what that act did was, first of all, it was born out of the frustrations with the post-World War II Marshall Plan. And the act separated military and non-military programming, and it also established the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID. Which at that time, and I think even today, was really intended to focus on the longer-term economic and social development in countries around the world. So putting health in the context of foreign policy, the question is, why invest? The U.S. Is always, I think rightfully so, looking for a positive image in the world. We know that investing in health is constructive global engagement. There was a quote recently by former Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist, and he said that countries don't attack nations that save their babies, and that's very true. So if you invest in basic services, you create stronger societies, democracy, and otherwise. Investing in health also is a sentiment that Americans value, and any public opinion polling will demonstrate that U.S. Citizens support investing in health around the world. There's an established link to security. For those of you who have not seen the World Health Report from this year, that was about health and security. We have seen with XDR-TB and most international or infectious disease outbreaks that we very much need to have systems in place to identify threats at their epicenter before they travel to the U.S. and affect the American health system. We know that health has a link to poverty alleviation, and we also know, I think, perhaps most importantly, that we have a successful track record. When you invest, it does, in fact, make a difference. Following on that last point, here's just a listing, a very brief listing of some of the successes that we've had. We've eradicated smallpox. There have been many strides in terms of basic child survival, which has helped the child mortality rate to go down by 50% in the past 50 years. Over 1 billion people with access to safe drinking water through programs like PEPFAR, the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief. We've seen good work in terms of global AIDS as well as food aid. The image on the right-hand side shows that the U.S. government has been engaged in efforts such as malaria eradication since the 1960s. This slide, I think, is perhaps a preview to Kyle's fuller presentation. But what this shows is U.S. government spending on global health for the past decade, between fiscal year 1997 to 2007. Just to draw your attention to, in 1997, global health spending was just around $1 billion. And 10 years later, we're over $5 billion, and we'll probably pass $6 billion this year. So an exponential increase, and we can discuss more of that later. I would point out, though, that the top line, the top black line, is HIV/AIDS, and that's where the most of that spending has been. Non-AIDS spending still teeters around $1 billion combined. So $6 billion is a lot of money when observed in isolation. But if you take a step back and look at this in context, this is U.S. global health spending in the context of the U.S. budget, and we'll work our way down. So first, international affairs spending, that's where you will find health. That is about 1% of the U.S. federal budget, U.S. federal budget being about $2.8 trillion. Of that 1%, 16% is dedicated to global health, AIDS, TB, malaria, child survival, family planning, reproductive health. If you are to strip out AIDS spending, which we saw was the bulk of the increase that we've seen over the past decade, 3% of that 1% is for basic health services, child survival, reproductive health, and otherwise. So when you start to back out the dollar amount, you're actually getting down into just the hundreds of millions as opposed to multi-billion dollar investments. So the beginning of last year, in 2006, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice announced a new day for foreign assistance. Obviously, a lot has changed in the world since 1961, and I'd say even in the past decade, if not the past 6 or 7 years alone. The goals of this new foreign assistance reform were, one, to ensure that our foreign assistance is designed to meet our foreign policy objectives, the primary foreign policy objective of today being national security interests. The second goal was to align foreign assistance activities of the State Department, where you find PEPFAR, and USAID, and then finally to be responsible stewards of U.S. taxpayer money. There are stories, and I think rightfully so, that when members of the administration and Congress look to see how much we're spending on a certain disease area or in a certain country, given the system that existed before the foreign assistance reform announcement, it was very difficult to track where money was being spent, how, and to what impact. And so this was also part of the impetus behind. Now, few in the global health community would disagree with those goals. The larger concern has been around content and process, which we'll get to in just a minute. So this slide, the blue words, security, democracy, trade, and investment, improve lives, are kind of the how, and the what is responsible sovereignty of countries over time. Just to say that the overarching kind of conceptual framework was presented as three Ds: defense, diplomacy, and development. You would find health and development, and that over time, under this coordinated strategy, you would ultimately lead to democracy, another goal of the U.S. foreign assistance at this time. A busy slide. Happy to share the fuller document with folks if they'd like to have that over after the presentation. The top red circle shows that there are five objectives, and I can go through them very quickly: peace and security, governing justly, and democracy, economic growth, and humanitarian assistance. In the middle, with the big red arrow, you see investing in people, and that's where you will now find health joined in with education and other social services for countries. Looking along the left-hand margin, what you have is a new categorization of countries, different types of countries, where they are in terms of development, in terms of democracy, as categorized or as observed by the U.S. government. And what you see is that for each objective, there are different strategies then that the U.S. government would take by each country type. This is getting into the weeds just a little bit, but I would point out that of the different country categories, the U.S. government is investing in different areas more heavily. So in some countries, you would invest in peace and security more heavily than you would investing in people or social services. And that actually correlates with the type of funds that go into countries, whether it's basic development assistance that supports programs or whether it's larger funds that are more flexible for countries to decide how they'd like to best spend that money. So the framework, again, overarching, makes sense. Of course, we want a system that works well, but there were some considerations and some concerns among the community. This slide here shows the conceptual and procedural considerations or concerns that the community had. First, Given the overarching goal, which was to build and sustain democracies and well-governed states that respond to their people, as well as the international system, how does this relate to poverty alleviation, which a lot of us who have worked in health and development feel is a primary goal of foreign assistance? That was a big question that came out of the announcement of this reform. Another question, is this the further militarization of foreign aid? If we're linking our resources to countries where we have a strategic investment or a strategic interest, does that make sense? If we are going to give money to countries that kind of the top strategic countries as opposed to those with the greatest disease burden, ultimately, is that in line with what we believe we should be doing in development and health? One of the other things that the foreign assistance announcement did, and I'll speak to this in just a second as well, is that it created a new department or a new office where the work of state and USAID would be coordinated. And so the question is this a step toward dismantling USAID? The response from the administration has been no. I think that there are still some concerns in the community about that, or at least the authority and autonomy that USAID would have to successfully implement programs. Another major concern is pace. This happened very quickly. From January through the end of last year, just the announcements that were coming out, the announcements that actually weren't coming out, and some of the changes that were being observed, the community was very nervous about what this meant for programming. And then finally, stakeholder engagement. I think I will be diplomatic to say that there were concerns that consultation and a responsible turnaround time was subject to interpretation, depending on who was engaged. In terms of technical considerations, let me put this into a little bit more context, which is not on this slide. When you're looking at foreign assistance or foreign policy, there are about 8 countries where the U.S. has a very strong strategic interest. They're your Israels, your Egypts, your Jordans, your Pakistans, your Colombias. And a lot of money goes there through different, not just health, but through different channels and different programs. When you take out of the international affairs budget funding for those countries, that leaves you a smaller pot. Then when you take out funding for special initiatives, PEPFAR, the Millennium Challenge Corporation, other specific initiatives that are pretty much guaranteed to get resources and policy support, that strips out another level of funding. So what that leaves you is a very small pool, $3 to $5 billion, where you're trying to do health and education and other basic development services. So that's where a lot of the kind of fundamental concern comes from. So the question, particularly in terms of technical considerations, is the countries. What are the selection criteria? Is it military? Is it political? Is it disease burden? Is it all three? And what is the balance among those? Why are special initiatives exempt? Under this new framework, PEPFAR is not subject to these rules. MCC is not subject to these rules. PMI has a little bit of protection, even though it's still under USAID. Why is that? And if you're coordinating a foreign assistance approach, what is the relationship and what is the justification? And then finally, for countries, what we've seen, and I'll show an example in just a moment, we've seen shifting of money from accounts. Again, depending on the account that resources flow through, they can be used for different things, and there are different levels of flexibility there. A final technical consideration is, what are the indicators for success? How are foreign assistance funds used? What's achieved with these funds? What progress are we making toward foreign assistance goals? And for those of you in evaluation and monitoring, these are serious considerations to justify future investments. And the indicators of performance. A lot of the indicators that have been proposed are process indicators. So you're counting points of contact as opposed to outcomes. And so is that acceptable foreign assistance, particularly for health, that you have quantity as opposed to quality or ultimate outcomes? And at the end of the day, are these indicators the appropriate measure of sustainability? A couple of examples for you. This was in the FY 2008 proposed budget, the president's budget. What this shows is that for a country like Ethiopia, you see that MCH funding, family planning funding, and even malaria funding was proposed to decrease, while HIV/AIDS, which Ethiopia is a PEPFAR country, was going to increase from $109 million to $409 million, so an exponential increase. Ethiopia, it ranks 19th in terms of child mortality rates. So if we're trying to improve the health of the country, is that the wisest distribution of investments? It's not a judgment, but it is a question that should be considered. And also following on that proposal for increases and decreases in spending within the country, you have a quote from Randall Tobias, who was the first director of foreign assistance, that actually said that even though we're making progress in HIV/AIDS, if it's not coordinated with other programs, then essentially we're undermining our efforts in the long term. So there's a little bit of a conflict that we were seeing, at least over the past year, in terms of what was being proposed versus what was being said. Another example in terms of regions, this is Latin America, or the LAC region. This shows funding over the past 7 years for child survival and health. We've seen an increase, fortunately, at the beginning, and then relatively stagnant funding. And then for 2008, we saw a proposed pretty significant dip. And what we saw in the budget justification, we saw that the request is a decrease of 17%. And essentially that was reflecting, in quoting, significant successes that have been achieved after 40 years of worldwide family planning of efforts. And on the right-hand side, your images of midwives in Guatemala. And the second bullet at the bottom there shows a statement by the World Bank, which actually says that we actually have a very long way to go and we're not making the progress that we expect. So you can understand the confusion or the questions that would rise out of the community when you're seeing statements arguing both sides, and depending on where you are, how close you are to the work, what kinds of concerns that would raise. Looking at the future of foreign assistance. For those of you in Washington, I think that this speaks for itself. But this is the first look at, and you guys can ask after the presentation if you don't get it. Randall Tobias, former executive at Eli Lilly, as well as the first Global AIDS coordinator, was the first director of foreign assistance. Henrietta Fore has recently been confirmed by the Senate and will replace him as in this leadership role. The slide won't go away. I didn't do that, I promise. And we're nearing the end of the presentation. Another question in terms of the future foreign assistance reform. As I mentioned, I think between some of the transition in terms of leadership for foreign assistance, or the F Bureau, as they call it, as well as the community actually being quite organized and asking the right and noise-making questions, and Congress asking the right questions and forcing itself to be engaged as it should, because the ultimate decision is theirs to approve. The process has slowed, but there are still some questions that we're looking at moving forward. First is in terms of strategy. We need a very clear strategy, and we need to understand how health fits into development, first level, foreign assistance, second level, foreign policy, third level. There's also a need for coordination. We need to increase it, we need to improve it, and it needs to be at multiple levels. You have special initiatives. You have PEPFAR, which is in 15 countries, mostly in Africa. But there are plenty of other countries that have an AIDS problem. And so we need to be able to coordinate within PEPFAR, prevention services, treatment services. You need to be able to coordinate between PEPFAR and malaria, between PEPFAR and child survival. You need to coordinate across the U.S. government as well as with other donors. There's a lot of money flowing, and we need to understand how it all works together. And then finally, I think that we would still press for initiatives to be first and foremost incorporated into the overall strategy, and at least to explain, if not remove, the exemptions. And then also making sure that these funds are, in congressional language, and Kyle will appreciate this, that we supplement and not supplant. Essentially, that if you have AIDS programming in a country, that you don't then reduce other funding for other areas such as maternal and child health or reproductive health. Now, in terms of lessons learned, I will not leave you with conclusions, but probably more questions that this process has raised. First and foremost, it's something that we're wrestling with at my organization. What is the U.S. government's global health strategy? You have independent programs flowing, and there is a lack of coordination between them, and we need an overarching framework for what that means. What is the role of health and development, health and foreign policy? What is the political or programmatic balance between strategic interest in countries and humanitarian interest or investments? So what happens when we have a new administration and their approach is slightly, or their interpretation is slightly different? But as we know, you don't see major impacts in terms of health services in 4 years or in 8 years of an administration. So how do we make sure that there's a longer thread there that makes sure that our investments make sense? again, reviewing the role of the Director of Foreign Assistance, what the relationship between bilateral foreign assistance, which is what the U.S. government does, and how it relates to other global investments. And then finally, is there an inherent dichotomy between promoting governance and poverty reduction? That's something that we saw over the past year. I will leave you with one more PowerPoint broken rule, which is to continue the quote from John F. Kennedy in 1960. He says, to fail to meet these obligations would be disastrous and in the long term more expensive. And he essentially says that a program for assistance to underdeveloped nations must continue. This statement was 50 years ago, and it more than 50 years ago, and I think that it holds today. So hopefully this sets the frame for the beginning of the conversation, and I look forward to the discussion afterward. Thank you very much.